the American church really is gay.
Are you asking me out on a date?
Effeminate.
The Bible appears more to whisper when it comes to sexual sin.
Shallow.
I said, I want the African-American seven.
And full of cowardly leaders.
Are we going to keep bickering over secondary issues?
America desperately needs to return to the Father. Either we fall on the rock and are broken, or we fall on the ground and are crushed under that rock. To fall on top of the rock and be broken is exactly the condition in which God brings reformation and revival. So which way is it, prodigal America? Are you coming home to the Father? Join us this Reformation Day in Fort Worth, Texas, October 31st through November 2nd at Will Rogers Event Center, just days before our presidential election. And join with the thousands of us for the blessing of gathering together with God's people and celebrating God's goodness with beer and psalms. Hear from speakers such as Dr. James White, Pastor Toby Sumner, Pastor Doug Wilson, Dr. George Grant, Gaben Knox, Steve Dace, and more. Don't forget our Business Makers Conference, jumpy castles for the kiddos, after parties, single events, the pastor's luncheon, the business leader's luncheon, and many more surprises coming. America has squandered her inheritance far too long. It's time she repents and returns home to her Father. Fight, Laugh, Feast presents Prodigal America.
Hey y'all, welcome to Cross Politic on the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network. Pastor Toby Chuck Knox, I'm the water boy. It's good to be with you. And this show is about discipleship.
Oh.
Okay. And this is prophetic. I don't know what happened here, but our buddy is Nathan. Let's just call him Nathan.
Okay. Just making up names.
It is his first name.
Okay.
He had the right desire to send us each paddles.
What?
Okay. He homemade discipleship paddles. We're just going to call them discipleship.
Discipleship paddles.
Even though our kids are a little more grown out of the house or grown up. But we can pass these down to our great grandkids.
Some Proverbs paddles.
Yeah, some serious.
Y'all hear that?
Uh-oh.
So,
man.
Because, you know, you especially young kids, you got to have a paddle if you're going to disciple.
This is like
it's intense.
I mean, wow.
I'm glad he didn't screw holes in them.
Hey, before y'all say anything else, remember, we are in a public show and people listen and stuff. I just think y'all should be aware.
Yeah, I
want to thank him for these fishing paddles that he sent to
ping
us.
Ping pong.
Yes.
Yeah, what's that new game that people are playing
racquetball or something.
With the plastic ball.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Pickleball. What's the game where they run up to the ball and hit it?
Pickleball.
No.
Tennis.
False. Not pickleball. They run up.
There's a lot of games.
Cricket.
Yes, cricket. There we go.
There we go.
That's
cricket.
It's cricket.
Okay.
Run up to the ball. I'm glad, how many people.
I'm glad we had this conversation.
Yeah. So this is a nice pickleball mallet.
Not so long ago, the American dream was alive and well. Employees who worked hard were rewarded.
People could spank their kids. I mean, anyway.
Employers looked for people who could do the job, not for people who had the right political views. RedBalloon.work is a job site designed to get us back to what made American businesses successful.
Spanking.
Discipline.
Free speech, hard work, and having fun. If you're a free speech employer who wants to hire employees who focus on their work and not identity politics, then post a job on redballoon.work. If you're an employee who's being censored at work or is being forced to comply with the current zeitgeist, post your resume on redballoon.work and look for a new job today. Redballoon.work, the job site where free speech is still alive. Redballoon.work.
Message.
All right.
You're out of ink, man. I mean, you're just
that mind your business.
You're driving me nuts.
This has nothing to do with you. I'm sitting over here working this pen.
trying to get every inch of ink out of it.
It's going
to
come.
It's not working.
Anyways, Mr. Dennis Allen. Is
regretting coming to show.
It's like, what did I do? Decorated pass from being a combat rated F-15 fighter pilot to being a CEO of national and international businesses. He's also an alum of the Oxford Center for Christian Apologetics, and he's the author of the brand new book, hot off the presses, The Disciple Dilemma. Dennis, thanks for joining us on Cross Politic.
Well, I'm really amped to get to be with a bunch of guys that has
something on their table. I guess it comes out of the Bible. Didn't Jesus say, if you love me, beat my sheep? Is that what that paddle's all about?
Don't help them, Dennis. No, Dennis.
Don't.
Don't help them.
No. Hey, I was gonna ask you a question about F-15s. When are they going electric?
Well, actually, the jet is totally electric now on everything except those two big old diesel engines at the back end of it, you know, and it was one of the first jets that was that.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
It's really cool. I mean, you're probably making a little bit of a lean into an EV type thing, right? But this is one really bad platform. People do not want to fight that airplane, and it does have some great electronics in it.
Wow.
So speaking of these F-15s, are you a plant for the military?
Well, we'll advertise a little bit for all except those who could not be adequately discipled, which is a bunch of Navy pilots.
Oh. I'm not saying nope, because I don't want to pick sides on that one. I ain't give them no sound bits.
So, but seriously, how did an F-15 pilot end up writing a book on Christian discipleship?
Yeah, you know, this is some of the hilarious sense of humor God has in the world, isn't it? You know, I step back and I look at the career. My career looks like an ADD nightmare, right? When you just stare at all the things going on in it, going all the way from being deeply discipled by some wonderful guys in my early years, the calling to go fly, and then being deeply discipled by some great guys in the F-15. I mean, some absolutely fantastic Jedi Knights who are also really terrific followers of Christ. And then kind of my story taking me out into the business world. It's just amazing to see how the Lord's sovereignty drives you through life.
Mm-hmm. That's really fantastic. So your book is, you kind of spend a lot of it unpacking a lot of faulty traditions that the church has picked up in discipleship and comparing them kind of to the, sort of imbibed a sort of business mentality. Can you just break that apart just a little bit for us?
Yeah, I'm glad you let me set that up. There's a little bit of a thing that my English teacher used to talk about called semantic sedation. And it's kind of when a word is one of those situations that just puts you to sleep. You hear the word and you glaze over and you go, yeah, I got that and what that is. And we find a lot in the Christian world that discipleship is one of those words that it puts people to sleep really quick because you go, yeah, belong to a church. Yeah, read my Bible. Yeah, pray. And what I noticed over the years as a believer, both in leadership roles in the church, as well as in corporate and commercial life, is that people largely don't understand who they are. What is their calling, their purpose, and their destiny? So the disciple dilemma is an attempt to talk directly to leaders. This is sort of the weird part about this book, guys. This is not a book about quote unquote discipleship, the checklist of discipleship. This is really a book to leaders saying that we have been hacked by ourselves. We're a little bit like the Russian trolls, right? The Russian data trolls, they're finding out they're blowing up more of their own computers than they are ours. And in a way, over the centuries, 18 centuries, we've been trying to upgrade the model of discipleship that Jesus gave us, not to good effect. And what it's done is the traditionalism avalanches that we pile on ourselves are kind of invisible to us, but they put us to sleep. So that's kind of how I'll tee that up. And we can kind of probe maybe symptoms as well as cause and direction forward from there.
Well, I think so. But you said something really interesting. You basically said we got hacked. And I'm wondering who hacked us and why did they hack us? And maybe that'll lead you into some of the things.
Yeah, that's a great one. Do you like Chuck Knox better? Or do you go with Dave?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. That was the opposite answer from what the angel said to Joseph. Okay, got that. So the whole drill behind the hacked is this. Jesus gave us a very wonderful operating system. It's a communications app. It's designed to take assets, that would be you and me, out into the world to interact with people, disciples who make disciples, That's the way the system's designed to work. We're supposed to be able to work in very toxic, corrosive, challenging environments. But over the years, what we've done is we've institutionalized what we know to be Jesus's model, and it has slowly taken us into a muted, rebooting, inert operating process. So this hack really wasn't intentional in most cases, although There's a few that were. Most of the hack has been just us trying to upgrade the system because we thought, well, Jesus didn't think of this, so we'll throw this in the pile. So we put these traditions in place, right? Give you one example.
Yeah.
One of the ones that's very popular in Western Christianity today is the idea of optional lordship, which is tee them up, bring them in the door, tell them whatever you have to do so that they will be saved. So they'll come to Christ. Don't show them the fine print. There's some really scary fine print in there about having to surrender, to become a doulos, to become a bond servant. Your life is no longer your own. Let's not get into that kind of stuff. Let's get them saved. And so people think, well, I like the deal of being saved. I want to be saved. This thing about lordship, I'm good. I don't need that. And we picked that one up in the third century and talked about that. So you have things like optional lordship. You have catch and release Christianity. Just get them through the production line to get them saved. Make them a member. Get them on down the road. Push them aside. Give them a Bible. Hope it works well for them. Largely, statistically today, we find that the Christian community has been orphaned. We've saved them. They're sitting under some great teaching. Don't get me wrong. Churches are doing a fantastic job on the educational side. But what we're doing is losing that ability to have someone one-on-one alongside, taking me as an apprentice into mimicking the Chuck Knox, the rabbi who was taking me into the world and then out into the world. And so I can become a disciple who makes disciples. We've hacked that system.
You know, it's funny you call Knox a rabbi. I appreciate that.
That was a courtesy.
But I was, I would say the trajectory of current church's teaching is not good. You can just kind of illustrate America. When America was founded, 98% of America was Christian, and now we're down to 25% or something. 40 million out of 300 million, less than that then. And so it seems to me there's a discipleship problem, but there's a discipleship problem because there's a leadership problem, and the leaders, I mean, the church is so influenced by our culture and by the pressures, around us that the leaders are the problem. And then that's why the discipleship is broken down. Open-ended question.
I love you teeing that up, Gabe. I absolutely love you teeing that up because that's sort of the core of the book. It is that until leadership starts changing their life first and then driving the expectation into the culture of the church, we're going to keep repeating this. Yes, we have, I think, as a church globally, we probably have the richest resources. And I do think we have some terrific preaching going on out there. I mean, you got to just take, I mean, if you want to tell Toby something right now privately, I'm willing to mute and wait for you guys to talk that out. Right?
We'll be right back.
I mean, the issue that we have to face is that most of us have been told, sit in the pews, listen to the preaching. All the while, the institutional church is under great stress right now. And what I mean by that is there's a term that I use called churchianity. I think you've probably heard this in some other conversations as well. Churchianity is the visible church's organization and institutional structure. And in that, what you're finding is that there's a tremendous amount of load placed on a Toby. He's got to deal with the building. He's got to deal with the programs. He's got to deal with messy people like us, right? It's a mess.
Right.
And so when you think about this load that's beginning to pile up on the church, we are losing part of the Old Testament, the New Testament, and Jesus' modeling of discipleship. So like, here's one for us to play with in a moment. I would argue that the Bet Sefer, that's sort of the high school version of getting started as a disciple. You learn how to read, you learn how to write, kind of learn there's a Bible, you learn what church is about, you learn about community. That we do pretty well. There's two other pieces to discipleship that the Bible talks about, that Jesus modeled, the Bet Midrash, the Bet Talmud. Those are Hebrew terms, but think of them like this. Think of the Midrash, sort of the middle phase, as apprenticeship. And the Talmud as you are launched out into practice, but you're launched out alongside that rabbi, that Chuck Knox rabbi, who's taking you out there and saying, this is how I interact with people. This is how I follow Christ. This is how I imitate Christ. And now you start noticing that Chuck Knox is beginning to fade. He's bringing another wingman alongside me, and I'm going out into the world to become one of those disciples who makes disciples, who makes disciples. We've lost that individuality in the church because we are so lost in the institutionality of the church in many cases.
I got a follow-up question. You want to read the ad?
Yeah, I'll read the ad. Yeah. God the Father's waiting and looking down the road for all his prodigal sons to return. Will prodigal America return to the Father in repentance, confessing that Jesus Christ is Lord?
Only if they're discipled, right?
Or will we fall to our own destruction and become a pillar of salt as a memorial for other nations? Join us on Reformation Weekend this year, 2024, October 31st to November 2nd, in Fort Worth, Texas, for the annual Fight Laugh Feast Conference. This year's theme is Prodigal America. You'll spend the weekend hearing from George Grant, Dusty Devers, Steve Dace, James White, Doug Wilson. Of course, we'll be there with a live show, kicking everything off, singing psalms, feasting on good food. You can get tickets today at prodigalamerica.com.
Early bird is April 15th.
Oh.
So that's the first early bird. And then the second early bird is through July 1st.
Yeah, did you mention the part about everybody gets a pickleball paddle?
Pickleball paddle.
Yeah, everybody gets one of those.
They're being handed out.
As soon as you walk in, it goes with your bag.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so there's a couple of things. I'm sorry, you had a follow-up question. I'm curious, when you were talking earlier, Dennis, you talked about the lordship controversy. I don't know if a lot of people remember this. I feel like I'm getting old because I remember controversies. I remember hearing people early in Christendom talk about controversies. Like, ooh, I ain't been old enough to even remember a controversy. Yeah. But this one, I remember when I came into Reformedom, John MacArthur was going through this controversy on the lordship controversy. He even wrote a book about it. Are we still facing that right now? I thought that he won that battle and that thing was over. But the way you're talking about this, it doesn't sound like that particular battle has ended.
Here's a few stats that kind of color what we're talking about today. And we researched some of this in the book. You can follow another parallel type book, The Great Dechurching, Jim Davis, Michael Graham, talking about the same sort of thing. So we have today, we were referencing just a minute ago, that there are about 150-ish million people who claim to be Christian and about 45, 50 that more or less show up at church 1.7 times a month, so go the stats. But in that crowd, we also have 40 million people who said they bowed the knee to Christ, who said they grew up in the church, who have walked out the doors, millennials and Gen Zs. And the reason for that was, I don't need what you guys are selling. Now, I think that suggests to us that at the very least, we've got some sort of a problem with the recognition of lordship versus free offer on salvation. That would be one kind of way to take that on.
Mm-hmm. To just use the stats. You got all these people that have professed faith, but versus those who are at least showing some commitment
to church. Acting it out and bearing fruit.
Take it from another angle too, guys. I mean, think about this. 93% of the people in your pews that are left after the 40 million walked out, that's, by the way, between 65 and 80%, depending on the age stage. If you're kind of old millennial, 65% of you who grew up in the church walked away. If you're in the Gen Z range right now, you're looking at 75% who grew up in the church walking out. That's one to think about. Mm-hmm. Those of you who are left in the pews, 93%, not my job to talk about my faith. That's what Toby, that's what David, that's what Gabe does. They take the tough questions. Mm-hmm. 82%, no Bible study, no fellowship, no prayer life. I show up 1.7 times a month for a sermon. I'm inert. So I begin to think we do have a lordship problem.
That's interesting because I'm not arguing with you, but I do want to maybe put this on the table too. One of the things that COVID pushed out in the forefront is that a lot of people's theology didn't really have any practical application to the rest of the world. And I'm wondering that the more fractured that our world has become, and there was a group of evangelicals that have just mainly been, hey, preach the gospel, preach the gospel, preach the gospel, never showed you, and this might be go right to the discipleship problem, never showed you how the gospel applied to everything else in society. And COVID comes around and all of a sudden people were like, just do what they said. And there was no Christian... there was no worldview for the gospel that Christians had heard to apply. And some of the younger generations have been questioning right now, even beforehand, the question is, okay, who does your business support? Does it support this idea, support that idea? I can't do business with you. There hasn't been a worldview for the Christian, this generation, to be able to understand and apply. So is it just it's not maybe just a discipleship problem. There's a worldview problem from Christians that don't give anybody any foundation.
I love the way you're setting this up. And by the way, if you guys could just prove me a heretic, I can stop doing this kind of stuff and get back to what I was doing. And I can't even remember what that was anymore.
But we don't do that here.
Here's the challenge that we face. I'm going to tell you this, and this may help you kick me off the show early. The mission of every single believer is to be a disciple, a follower, a methete of Christ, a doulos, a bondservant. The mission of every single church is to make disciples. The mission of every single seminary and every Christian school is to make disciples. Your secondary is to infuse knowledge, so on and so forth. However, when we do not make disciples, when we think that herd community, I bring you to church, I slosh you around in the pews, I listen to a great sermon, which is actually like taking a great vitamin, makes disciples? No, it doesn't. I mean, you can't survive on vitamins. They're good for you, but you won't survive on them. You can't survive on sermons. You've got to have somebody, a wingman, flying with you through life to go forward and start untangling theology so that I can walk into these environments where people are angry, they don't like you, they don't look like you, they don't act like you, they don't want to be around you, and you start taking that 1 Peter 3:15 tack on, which is the disciple is somebody who is bringing Christ as Lord in his heart in so that when people ask you for the reason, for the hope that's in you, you start building a relationship with them and they go, okay, you're kind of weird. I want to know a little more about what's going on here.
Right.
That's who we are.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think, I'm sorry, I'm just hogging the show.
No, go.
But it seems like a lot of what you're talking about, this is what has always bothered me about parachurch ministries, is has been supplemented by parachurch ministries. And so parachurch ministries, even shows like this, are the ones who are discipling people. And it's always bothered me because I thought that should come directly in one way or another from the relationship and the people from the church. And so I think that's an issue. But could you, for me, walk out what discipleship then looks like? Because I think everybody hears that word and there's not really a definition to it yet. So then what does it practically look like that's different from what you're that's different from what we currently see?
Yeah, let me frame that with this point also. There is a very commercial reason why it's so hard for churches to make disciples. And I'll come back to that in just a minute. If we're going to talk about a disciple, what we need to be talking about is someone, an individual, not a group of people. The symptom of disciples is to show up as a group. The disciple is an individual, a bondservant follower of Christ, uniquely called in a vocation, a destiny, a purpose, and an identity. And he is to, this is by Jesus' model, be paired up. I use the term wingman, but just think of another colleague who's kind of either in your space in your neighborhood, or your age stage with kids, or the work role that you're in, or the professional stuff that you do. You two are going through life together. You are working with each other to guard each other's 6 o'clock. That's fighter pilot terms for keeping bad guys and bad things from creeping up on me. But we're walking together as surrendered bondservants. We don't get surrendered inside the church today. I mean, we just don't get driven into the idea of your individuality as a bondservant, a bankrupt, without any hope of your own work bringing you out of this. And how do I begin to think about that as I get past this idea of education? I'm educated really well in the church, but what I'm not apprenticed in is actually getting outdoors, connecting with the human beings in the world around us, statesmanship, civility, politics, and certainly our ability to interact in our own communities is only going to be driven by disciples. There's no hope for politics and statesmanship and civility if we don't use disciples. That's the only leverage in the United States that's going to move what's going on in our social fabric. That'd be my pitch out.
So I want you to get to the point after this is kind of a two-part question where the second part, I want you to kind of sketch out what is Christ's discipleship model. What are you arguing scripturally for this model to look like? That's the second question. But the first question is, you're in this, I don't know, cross section of where you kind of were in the military, fighter pilot, and then you went to the business world and into the church world. So you're touching, you know, major organizations in our country. It seems to me, the military, it seems to be like a very heavy discipleship organization. You know, they got to break, you know, you got boot camp and then you break them down and you build them up into the kind of soldiers you want to see. But looking at the military right now, and I would say this is maybe kind of, there's some parallels here, I think, between the church and the military. Looking at the military right now, it's like they were not discipled well at all. I mean, just look at COVID and the forced vaccine situations and all the leaders who forced their people to go through the vaccine. I'm just picking on a specific example. And then in addition to that, another example is letting, you know, trans in the military, women in the military, that is unbiblical. You know, you got this whole military that is absolutely all they've done is disciple their people to either submit or leave the military. And I would say there's some parallels there. Maybe the church hasn't buckled as bad to the trans community or something like that, whatever. But there's some parallels there in the lack of whatever kind of discipleship the military is producing. It's not producing courageous leaders in the same way that discipleship in the church right now is not producing courageous leaders. And then I'd like you, so answer that question, then kind of get into what does discipleship look like according to Christ?
Well, if we step back in history, what we would find looking at empires as well as nations is that they crumble from the inside. Rare is it actually, when you think about this, right, that the conquering people got there while they were in a position of power or strength. So I would agree with you, Gabe, that there's a real danger in social experimentation in a weapon system that's designed to go blow things up and destroy defending and offending forces. And so that becomes very difficult. Now, I would tell you that out of all of the businesses that I've worked with and out of all the military ops that I've been involved with, I do still think, even compared to the church, the military does it really, really well. Because first of all, you're going to go to school. You're going to learn, how does the community work? How do we think? How do we employ ourselves in battle? So that's really good. But then somebody's going to come alongside you and they're going to start pouring into you. You're going to have a quote unquote military rabbi working along with you. I had in my F-15 career, a guy by the name of Ken Fox. His call sign was Sly Fox. He was one of the Jedi Knights in the F-15. And he walked up to me and he said, "You're coming with me." And he started teaching me how to employ the jet offensively, how to take out the bad guys in the sky so we could clear the skies and do what we wanted to do. That's not any different today in the fighter forces. The problem that we've got is the social fabric underneath it, that which makes the system strong, does have a lot of, shall we say, experimentation going on. But guys, I think for all of us as followers of Christ, we have to look at all societies and say, what else did you expect? This is the nature of man. The mannishness of man, as Francis Schaeffer would say, right? Mm-hmm. That's sort of my shot at question one. Is that enough, Gabe? You want to play with that a little more?
Yeah.
He's never satisfied, just so you know, Dennis.
I agree. We have a discipleship problem in the church, and we've spent most of the show talking about, like, the problems. And it's broken in such a way where, I mean, our results are so disparate and all over the map. And I mean, I guess I don't know what really my follow-up question here is, but it seems like there's so much rot in the church right now that, and in the military. I mean, I guess I'm looking at the military from outside looking in, so I'm not looking at it from inside in. But I've been working with a lot of chaplains in the military who've been fighting their superiors. We've had a number of military guys on the show who their superiors wouldn't even read some of their pills. You remember the guy from Utah?
Yeah.
Wouldn't even read some of their pills. And I would say, I think that's a good analogous scenario to what's going on in the church today. I mean, so many churches shut down during COVID, and the pastor, I know one church locally, the pastor went on a vacation when they shut down. Him and his family went off. And so you have this leadership in the church and in the military where it's like, it's so bankrupt, but
I guess you can take over. I didn't write the book, but I'm just like, my own thought, Gabe, is I do think there's a different structure between the church and the military.
Sure.
I think we saw bankruptcy in both in different respects.
Yeah.
I think there's a certain strength that I think Dennis is getting at that he sees in the military, but that because when you've pulled out the virtue, mm-hmm. when you've pulled the virtue out of it, yeah. that social fabric foundation out of it, then it really does become coercive and ugly and wicked, which is what we saw. Mm-hmm. I guess I question on the church side, if I understood Dennis correctly, to be saying, you know, he thought there was a lot of good information and a lot of good teaching going on. We're just not imparting it well. That's the part where I sort of have challenge with is I think we have a massive ignorance problem in the church.
Yeah.
And if we don't actually get the teaching right, I mean, we could sink a whole bunch of people up tomorrow. Yeah. And we would just be sharing ignorance. I'm sure you've seen that too, Dennis.
I think you've set this up really well, Toby, for this conversational point. What we have done is we've conducted a sort of ground school really well. We've let people learn an awful lot about how the church is supposed to operate. But what we've not done is broken it down into that individuality that allows us to go out. Now, here's a little secret that I've noticed, both in corporate life, which, by the way, in history, they stole their model from the church, who stole their model from business, who stole their model from the church. If you track this back to 18 centuries, this is great, sort of this massive codependency loop. And the issue is, we can mass produce really effective people. We don't need the one on one. And the church has been steeped in this tradition. So we think that if we just listen to you from the pulpit, we'll be equipped enough to be able to go out and do what we want to go do. When in fact, what we really actually have to do is have the leadership model the one-on-one. We've got to go first. As the expression is, you got to eat your own dog food. We've got to start first, pairing up, teaming up to take people out onto the street so they can make the next two. Those two make the two, and we move forward from there. And that's really the model that we see in the New Testament. It's that bet midrash. That is the beginnings of the pairings, the rabbi that I'm following, learning, imitating, mimicking, just as we saw the disciples. Think about the three closest ones for Christ, Peter, James, John, and then arguably also Mary and Martha, very close to him, learning how he talked, learning how he thinks, learning how he reacts and interacts with people. And then from there, slowly we get pushed to the front. He fades to the back and he goes and starts working other people while we're beginning to interact with more. In this world today, the big struggle that we're facing is the idea that I don't want to go interact outdoors. I want to bring clips of people onto my podcast and criticize them rather than go meet with those people. This is so important. Get in front of these people. We were chatting just before the show. One of the most interesting conversations I hope to have very soon is with Jim Wallace, former Sojourners, now Georgetown Center for Justice. And we agreed on two things. One, the resurrection is absolutely physically real, and we are called to be bond servants. Now, we're going to have a lot of divergent conversations from there, but he said, how do I make disciples? You ask how we make disciples. Dennis doesn't have that answer, but Christ does. And he made it really, really plain. You get close to somebody. You let them see your warts as well as your wonderfuls. You spend time with them. Holy mackerel. That's the most rare, the most coveted thing in today's world. Gen Z and millennials are craving time with people. Forget all the trauma, right, of the COVID stuff. Forget the trauma of the woke and the social justice for a minute. If you've got a political platform, jump up, preach, work on the laws. That's great. But for the rest of us, the apologia, giving the reason, being the disciple who's engaging and starting to invite people in to encounter Christ, our job is to have relationships with people. And we've got to do that one-on-one. You can't do that by dragging them, throwing them in a pew, and hoping Toby can convince them. That's not the way it works.
Yeah, I want to go backstage because I got some other things I want to ask.
I want to ask him about the family.
Oh,
I'm loving the disciples.
Okay. And fatherhood. Those are two things I want to hit with him real quick.
So I'm going to ask mine before yours. All right, Dennis, tell everybody where they can get your book from and the title of it.
Well, all the usual suspect places. You can pick them up at any of the bookstores. You can get it on Amazon, of course, and you can hit our website, www.thedisciplesdilemma.com, if you want to see what we're up to, all the troubles that we're causing in the universe.
All right.
You got one of those voices that makes me want to ask, what's next? It's got some radio voice. What's next? All right. Dennis, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate you coming across politics.
Hang on for a second.
All right. If you're single, get married. If you're married, have you some kids. And if you have kids, go disciple them, which is baptize them. Until next time, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbor as yourself. Go fight. Laugh and feast. This is Cross Politic.
It is the duty of the free man to resist tyranny at every turn. Every man will either watch his freedom stripped away or take action to protect what he loves.
Introducing the A3, the newest revolutionary body armor from Armored Republic. The A3 is the new standard for lightweight multi-hit body armor. A3 plates are incredibly light at 4.6 pounds. The patented design captures fragmentation while remaining multi-hit capable. The A3 will stop up to M80 ball, yet comes in at only 0.7 inches thick. The A3 is the thinnest NIJ.06 compliant or certified composite standalone plate that includes the drop test. The A3 is the first of its kind, patent pending, that combines an alloy strike face with polyethylene backing, revolutionizing body armor technology by providing strength and durability while remaining sleek and maneuverable. The A3 is the new standard in lightweight body armor. The fight against tyranny just got stronger.